Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 78 for September 27, 2011. This is Michael Loft.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp.
Well, coming up, Mike Calvo tells us about cases for your MacBook Air. You paid good money for the device. Why not protect it? Well, we put first up here in the news, users of the popular free Quitter client for use with Twitter will soon need to find another way to read and post their tweets. The developer of Quitter said that he will not be updating the program. His exact reasons are unclear, but likely a combination of demanding users, people not reading the documentation, therefore bugging him, and maybe some other time commitments. He's a college student as well. So I don't know. Yeah. What do you think, Ricky? It is my number one most used piece of software right now, I guess because of doing the podcast and collecting all the news and so forth. But what do we use next? I mean, we've got Easy Chirp, a web-based solution. You've got Twinbox for Outlook. You've got, obviously, Macintosh options, Urufukuru and Syrinx and all that cool stuff. But what do you think?
I'm not really a big fan of anything available on the Windows platform right now. While you can use Twitter from the web and things like Easy Chirp have made that far easier, there's nothing that is as elegant as the Quitter client where it stays out of the way. It doesn't have its own window dedicated to it. And you can be reading through a Word document or doing whatever it is. You get a direct message, press a hotkey to read it, and you're back to what you're doing without having to switch out of your current window. Now, one thing that should be pointed out is that development does appear to have halted on the client for now, but it's still functional and will continue to be until it isn't anymore. Of course, none of us know when that's going to be, but things may have changed by that time. You know, perhaps taking a step back from the community, the main developer, Christopher Toth, may decide that he does want to come back and work on it again or open up the source code for somebody else to come in and contribute. We just don't know. But for the moment, it's still functioning. For those of you who do want to find some alternative, there's, again, Easy Chirp, using just from the Twitter website or using something on your mobile devices like Tweetlist for iPhone. And I'm sure there are things for Android and other devices as well.
And what I didn't know is there's a great article entitled How to Zip Around Twitter with Keyboard Shortcuts. And I'm curious if all these, what screen readers and browsers support these, but I didn't realize that. You know, N for new tweet, R to reply, T to retweet. So
right,
there's a lot of good commands built in. Maybe that's the way we should try to mainstream and actually use the website itself.
I don't know, because again, not only is it not a particularly elegant solution, not just blind people use Twitter clients. Most sighted folk prefer using a client as well because it just seems to be more feature-rich and so on. But aside from that, your screen reader has hotkeys such as perhaps T and Shift T to jump between tables, block text, and things like that. And so chances are that your screen reader is going to intercept those Twitter keystrokes, making them sort of useless to you.
Yeah, I would encourage Mr. Toth to really, you know, maybe rethink it. Build a GUI on it, and, you know, so sighted folks can use this. And I think you could have a very popular selling client because I've seen nothing else like it in terms of features and functionality. But we appreciate what you've done thus far. And I
think he could definitely make some money with this if he chose. And I think the biggest problem, perhaps on both sides, is that people have to remember there is a human on the other end of that message that you're sending. It's very easy to type out a quick and snarky reply on Twitter or flood somebody's buffer with mentions, and that's part of how this whole thing got started. And people just don't stop to think, you know, there's a human. My message is going to affect this person in a negative way if I send it. And I feel like if we could all be more mindful of that, things would be a bit better. And I have a whole lot more to say about that. But even though this podcast is of indeterminate length, we don't want to take a whole lot of time with it. So I will try and jump down off the soapbox now.
Yeah, I'll throw in my 2 cents and leave it alone. But folks, read the documentation first. And remember, you get what you get far more, actually, than you pay for. So, you know, don't bother the developer unless you've got something really, really important, a major bug, you know, and they hate those too, but, you know, that makes sense. But just because you don't want to read the documentation and just get bored, whatever, you know, be mindful of that. Anyway, Facebook launches a major redesign of their site and now boasts an annoying news ticker. Most users seem to hate the new interface, which is standard. Anytime you change something, people are going to be annoyed by it. But And I think one thing that a lot of folks are complaining about is the fact that you can't like any negative comments about the new interface. So most people are saying, hey, you're heading toward the demise of MySpace. But initially, I haven't had a lot of time, but I've looked at it a little bit with System Access, and it looks like the new redesign may actually be a little easier to use or a little more accessible. Ricky, have you played with it much?
I have, and I agree with you as far as accessibility. This major change did not completely break accessibility, and I think in some cases it may have made it better. But the biggest problem with this is that it makes very little sense from a user perspective. And not only that, Facebook is sort of controlling what it is that you're looking at. You can't any longer look at your feeds in chronological order. You basically are looking at what Facebook determines as your top stories, and it's not really clear how they're doing this. And they say that eventually, if you scroll down past all that stuff, you will someday get to your feeds in chronological order. But the way this is laid out just makes very little sense. And there's the ticker that nobody likes, and they've done some things to be a bit more like Google Plus. And I think the timing in this was very interesting because Google Plus has now become public. And that may not have been the time for Facebook to roll out such a sweeping change that people obviously don't like at all.
I want to go a little bit more into that. There have been some comments and a lot of changes lately in Facebook and other applications. And we even heard this a little bit in a story that we're going to talk about later with the Google hearings. But there has been a conversation lately that users will just get hardened to it. Everybody complains about it for a little bit, and then in a couple of months, it always settles down and people just accept change. And I've never heard developers, especially developers of this high level, ever say that before. And that's kind of weird that, you know, you'll get over it. That's just the web. And sometimes you have to, you know, listen to that. Michael was talking earlier about submitting bugs and, you know, working with developers. You know, there are some useful dialogues that come. There are, you know, UI changes that come through what you're talking about with logical sense. But I'm kind of worried when I hear somebody say of this kind of level, nope, nah, you'll be fine. Just hang loose. Eventually you'll just forget all about it. And somebody used the term on one of the tech shows that you'll develop what's called right side blindness. And by that, visual people are using it with vision, will just stop looking to the right where all this information is, where all these ads are, where all these ticker bars are, and all of that kind of stuff. And that was interesting because it was a different term of blindness that I hadn't really thought about before, that some people just center in on this, you know, certain areas of the screen and look at that information in that area only. And so there may be some other ramifications to these changes. But yeah, don't worry about it because in about 3 weeks, it'll all probably be different again anyway because Facebook has made U-turns constantly. That's why we're having this conversation now.
Well, this one seems to have garnered more news than any of the previous Facebook redesigns. And I think eventually, if developers like this, like Facebook, Netflix, which we'll talk about in a bit, if these guys continue making sweeping changes like this and being so arrogant as to think that, you know, people are going to continue to stick with this because they don't have a choice, people do have choices. And I think that developers are going to start hearing that loud and clear. There is an article over in the show notes written by Molly Wood of CNET, and it basically says everything I want to, except far more eloquently than I could, about these changes that Facebook and Netflix are implementing and how it's ultimately going to hurt them and why.
Yeah, don't underestimate the UI. Respect my UI. Respect my accessibility.
That's right.
So speaking of that, Adobe announces an upcoming launch of Flash Player 11 as websites and Microsoft look toward using other languages like HTML5 and JavaScript to actually get away from using plugins to play audio and video in the web browser. Of course, they put out a security update this week. And I always hate those because, well, I used to hate those because it sits there and comes up when you restart your computer.
Update.
And then sometimes break something. So thank God for the Night Night Updater. What a great program that is.
Yes, indeed. Well, Comcast is rolling out an interesting program. This is a $9.99 per month internet for low-income families. This was a part of the deal that they got when purchasing NBC. They agreed to do this, and it is now coming to fruition. So the reason that they're doing this, aside from because they had to, is because there are a lot of students who are offline. I mean, there's a story about a girl sitting in the library parking lot because that's the only place she could go online where there was Wi-Fi. And as the digital age, as we go more and more into that, it is not just a nice to have to be online. It's a necessity. And so they're doing this to bring low-income students online and sort of narrow that gap.
It's a little bit more than just low income because to qualify, a family must have at least one student who qualifies for the free lunch program in
yes.
public schools. And the speeds, I guess, are 1.5 megabit down speed. And they guarantee that there won't be a raise in price. No fees for the equipment or rentals or activation. Subscribers cannot have an overdue bill or unreturned equipment. And they may not have been a subscriber within the last 90 days. So there are a few stipulations there.
Right. And there's going to be a $150 computer going along with this. It's not clear what they're doing for hardware or OS on that, but it is available.
I would bet it's a netbook. A lot of schools now are giving their students netbooks. That's a program they have here in Evansville. And they've got them locked down pretty tight. They've also agreed to provide internet training for those who need it. And really, it's a smart, it's kind of like Apple, you know, putting the Macs in the schools. You get the kids loyal to Comcast, and then you have maybe some lifetime customers. But again, I have to believe a lot of it was mandated, you know, you're going to get NBC, you're going to help the school kids. I'd like to see some other ISPs jump up to the plate and do this in other communities where Comcast is not an option. But we'll see how this rolls out in the future. And I wonder if there's people out there feeling, well, you know, those on fixed incomes, elderly and disabled, they should get this as well. But that wasn't in the stipulation. So, Australian residents now have talking set-top box. The Bush DHAS-03 manual has been put into DAISY format, and you can get that link over at Serotalk.com.
Logitech has released the Harmony Link, which can transform your iOS or your Android device into a universal remote. With this, you can connect up to 8 home theater devices, and you'll have an app on your phone which allows you to control those things. It's not clear how accessible the app is going to be, but it's definitely worth looking into. It's about $100.
The Department of Transportation is about to release rules requiring that airlines make their websites and possibly their kiosks more usable to persons with low vision. There will be a 60-day public comment period once the rules are released to the public register, which should take place around September 26th. And we will provide more information once that happens and how you can get involved and why you should get involved, the importance of it. And speaking of advocacy, residents of Ontario, Canada may wish to lobby for better accessibility to their elections. There's been a lot of work going on with the AODA Alliance, David Lepofsky and folks. And now there's four different methods that folks can use to vote in the October 6th elections. And I thought that this was an interesting segment we did talking about how folks can vote on the internet or over the phone in Australia. Some thought it was boring. I thought it was very exciting. But we're trying to do the same thing in Canada and trying to, some folks would like to see that option in the U.S. I certainly would. For one thing, our military personnel would give them an option to vote. So I follow that with a lot of interest, but we'll see what happens. So you can read more about that over at SarahTalk.com.
Well, let's see what's going on in screen reader news. Turns out there are a couple of things happening this month. You can check out the September FS cast to find out what's new in the JAWS 13 beta. Eric Damery demonstrates several of the new features that are available in the beta. A lot of people have been playing with this, and particularly people have been commenting on the new OCR feature in the JAWS 13 beta. Also in screen reader news, GW Micro now offers different methods to purchase your SMAs. Typically, you would purchase 3 SMAs at a time, but if you didn't have it within your budget to do that, you now have a couple of different options to look at instead. You can continue to purchase those 3 SMAs if you choose, or you can check out 2 SMAs, which are a bit cheaper. And there's also an SMA time plan, and basically you subscribe to that for 2 years and pay in as a sort of, again, subscription-based service, and you'll get your Window Eyes upgrades during that 2-year period.
Well, Ricky, I assume you're like me and you get tired of the question, which screen reader is best? Well, an article says it all. If only it were that simple. So what do you do? Well, they suggest trying demos of all screen readers, first starting with the programs that you need to use if you're needing this for employment, then maybe the programs that you want to use most. And I would say if the means are possible, have multiple screen readers. I use 4 for Windows and 1 for Mac. I don't usually need to get down to the 4th, but I mean, that's just the way it is. Usually one screen reader can do most of what you need, but if you're a power user, even an intermediate user, or like you said, maybe you need one screen reader for work and another one for home use. I mean, I start with System Access. That does 90%. Then I grab Window Eyes if I need it. And even Nevada, as some have called it, NVDA. And of course, obviously on the Mac, you've got one option with your voiceover. But and it takes all of them.
Yeah, it's definitely worth researching this yourself, because nobody's going to be able to answer that question for you. Nobody knows who you are as a computer user. Only you know that. And so it's up to you to check out these demos. And luckily, all manufacturers of screen readers do have a demo copy of them so that you can check it out before you have to spend any money at all and see if that screen reader is going to fit your needs.
When we come back, it's music, movies, TV shows, fun with phones. Yes, your phone can actually be a credit card now. We've talked about it. It is here in real time. Plus Apple News and much more, all coming up on Podcast 78.
My name is Meera Batra. I have been in this country 32 years, and this is how I live united. America has always been the land of promise, and in my community, many families have come for a better life. Coming from another culture myself, I know the desire to become part of a community, to feel at home, and to gain the tools for our children and families to succeed. So I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to look beyond their histories and to see what opportunities are available. We help them get involved with their kids' schools, network within the community, and when we do, we unite them. We make the community stronger. What I do is something I wish someone had done for me, and I am so grateful I am able to. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunities and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Where dogs and canes come together to form a peaceful coexistence.
Or maybe not.
This is the Saratalk Podcast Network.
Ricky, did you also get an email, as I did, from the president of Netflix, Mr. Reed Hastings, basically saying, "We're sorry we made you mad when we jumped the monthly price up from $10 to $16 for online movies and DVD by mail"? Yowza.
Yep, I did. And smack dab in the middle of the apology was like, "We're really sorry," and, "Oh, hey, yay, there's this new Quickster," and also, "We're deeply sorry for everything that we did." And that was the strangest method of announcing a new sort of spinoff business that I've ever seen.
Why don't you just say you're sorry for losing a million customers?
No, wait. HP did just as bad this month.
Really?
HP, when they announced their spinoff of WebOS and the Personal Systems Group and all of that. No, we've had a whole rash of bad PR moments here this year, and HP is just as bad at doing this as Netflix. It just seems to be really a moment of threes. I'm waiting for the next company to make a huge mistake like that.
Well, is it confirmed about HP with Meg Whitman, and they get the queen of who brought eBay to its popularity and use? I mean,
she's actually stepped up and said that there are things that we need to look over, and there are things that are going to remain the same. And so she actually released kind of a statement yesterday saying that Personal Systems is still possible to be spun off, or the WebOS firings have already started. Those started earlier this week. So PR nightmares. But with this, with Netflix, there's some other stuff. I've been reading a lot for our other podcast, End of Line. There's a couple of things that are going on with Netflix that are unique. And one is they have to work out deals with movie studios, as we've talked about before. But that's based on subscriber rates. And so that means people who are not streaming are still a part of the numbers that Netflix is serving. And so they are actually having to spend more money for people who aren't using the service. And one theory out there is that if they break this into two, then they're only charging the movie studios for the actual number of people who are using the streaming services rather than carrying along the people with the DVDs. There's another theory out there that was proposed last night that I thought was really interesting about if Netflix spins off Quickster into its own area, and that would be the DVD and now video game rentals part of what is Netflix, then they might be more of an acquisition target for Amazon.
Yeah, and that theory made a lot of sense to me. I was initially thinking that the reason for splitting Netflix and Quickster was because that Hastings and Co. simply wanted to get rid of the DVD service altogether and that they would later plan to sell Quickster to some poor sucker who wanted it. But the acquisition by Amazon actually makes a lot more sense. Of course, back to the launch itself of Quickster, I think that HP did pretty badly, but this really takes the cake. These guys didn't even look to see if the Twitter name was available, and it's not. It's by some guy who lacks any spelling or grammatical skills, and he basically talks about working out and his girlfriend and not much else of interest. Also, the name Quickster, there are so many different ways to misspell this, and what does it even mean? You know, Quickster, I have no idea what you do.
Exactly. I don't know what they were thinking of choosing that name, but they're also now focusing on getting TV networks. They just, worked out a deal with Discovery to compensate for the loss of movies that I believe is going to take place in February of 2012 when some deals fall through. So what can I say but good luck?
Pretty much.
Yikes.
Last week, we talked about the Overdrive for iOS devices and also getting books on your PC. But now you can get free library books on your Kindle. This is subject to the same rules as things like Overdrive, so there will still probably be a waiting list at your library for bestsellers. But what you're going to be able to do is look at your library's website once you have a library card, of course, and these Kindle books are going to show up in the eBooks section. And you'll be able to check them out just like you can any other print or digital book.
Mike Calvo and other music fans love Slacker for listening to music. And now folks who love sports may become avid fans as well. Slacker has partnered with ESPN to offer basically ESPN Radio for basic users. And those with the Plus and Premium accounts can actually create customized stations for their favorite teams and very specific sports information. So I don't know all the specifics of it yet, but it has rolled out. So it'll be curious to see if they can actually listen to games or listen to local stations and how exactly it works. This could be a major headache for online shoppers, those needing confidential communications, and in particular website owners, but it looks like hackers have figured out how to break SSL and TLS encryption. Now, more info will actually be posted as we're recording this, but it looks like, well, they say it only affects SSL 2.0 and TLS 1.0. However, most web servers are still misconfigured to use these protocols. And the question is, how serious is this? Well, Google apparently thinks it is. They're already taking steps to fix things on their end. But we'll tell you more about this and keep you updated on it as we find out how big of a deal this is at the end of the day. For those who have no idea what I just said, basically what we're talking about is when you do secure transactions, you know, when you see that HTTPS come up on the screen, or, you know, the padlock closes to mean you have a secure transaction. And this means that folks have found ways to maybe intercept and look at that information, depending upon which protocol is used to get the info there.
It's time for Google News now. And the top story, no question about it. As we mentioned earlier, Google Plus is now open to the public. So if you've been waiting to dive into this social network, but nobody loved you enough to give you an invite, it is open to all now. So you can go jump on that. CNET has posted a complete guide to how to use Google Plus, and that's definitely worth the read. This guide actually was posted in July, so there may have been a few things that have changed since then, but it's definitely still worth taking a look at.
And a recent Senate hearing put Google on the hot seat, asking if their paid links are getting higher priority than the most relevant information and results. Well, I personally say yes, and that's why I use Google a little bit less than I used to. I kind of switched to Bing, although I see they're starting to do the same thing. But really better explaining all this was Twig this week in Google, and we have a link to that. And you can go read all about Google in the hot seat in the U.S. Senate.
We talked last week about a couple of carriers investing in a competitor to Google Wallet using near-field communication. And now Google Wallet itself has been rolled out. So far, it's only available on one phone. It's a Sprint phone. It is the Nexus 4G, is that right?
Nexus S4G, yes.
Yes, S4G. Sorry about that.
So basically, folks, you can wave your phone at various retailers. A lady reviewed it and talked about using it in taxi cabs. You can create and refresh coupons. And apparently there's only one card right now, that being the Citibank MasterCard. But apparently you can transfer money and get a specific Google card or something. I read something about you can...
Yeah, you could do a prepaid Google card if your own credit card isn't supported. But you got to think ahead if you're going to do that. You got to have some money on it before you go out shopping, because it's not really easy to then go put some money on this Google card while you're out and about. What's interesting is that Google Wallet is definitely not the only player in this space. We talked last week about ISIS, I believe it is, and a couple of other people. Actually, Visa is, oddly enough, supporting Google Wallet, but they're also attempting to develop their own NFC payment system as well.
Yeah, and this is still developing. It's brand new technology. The next few months, the deals will be going in place. They're going to find a little gotchas. I still wonder, of course, the two questions, accessibility or abuse. So we'll have to see what happens with either one of those, or both of those, actually. But Google Chrome has launched an official release version 14, cross-platforming. You use it on Windows and Mac. And I am told this actually works with VoiceOver. So if you're having problems with Safari, especially in Lion, you can take a play with Google Chrome. A lot of cool features worth looking into here. There's audio mixing, something called Native Client that allows Flash and Silverlight, ActiveX and .NET and all that cool stuff that programmers love, and better support for Lion. So check it out.
It's time to pat ourselves on the back yet again, because we're great. If you don't believe us, why not check out That Android Show, the newest offering from the Sarah Talk Podcast Network, hosted by JJ Meadow, Access Anna, and our very own Joe Steinkamp. Episode 1 was recently released.
Who, me?
Yes, you.
Yeah, you.
Yeah, tremendous feedback already, and we have voicemails and emails and Twitter and just lots of great compliments for our first show, and we'll be recording episode 2 really soon. Can't thank everyone enough for that, and we appreciate that. We're going to discuss neat things about Android and Google, and it's amazing there are actually blind people who use Google phones out there. We're not alone. There aren't just three people in a room. We've actually gotten many people calling in and talking about their Google phones. And you know what? You can actually call in and leave us an iReport about this show on your Android phone or your iOS phone, all simply through iBlink Radio.
Yep.
Oh, there was a lot of talk at CSUN about Google phones, I remember. There's quite a lot of buzz.
Exactly. So Android is, again, not something to be ignored. And That Android Show is a great place where you can hear from Android users about what it is that they're doing. You can grab this through iBlink Radio, through your favorite RSS feed, and it's also available in iTunes.
ThatAndroidShow.com, or just add the /feed for the RSS portal for that. Sarah Tech has also released iBlink Radio version 2.06, which is ready for iOS 5 when that is released to the masses. So,
indeed.
You will be set.
We mentioned coming up in the show, we have part 2 of a 4-part review on the MacBook Air. If you didn't catch part 1, that is available over at saratalk.com. It is a part of the podcast, or you can actually get it as a standalone written file if you like, if you just kind of want to briefly read through what was said rather than listening to the audio, you can do that too.
And in Apple land, will they again win for having the greatest customer satisfaction, even though some folks have complained about phone support going downhill with the increased number of users, with all the iPads and just Apple really becoming more of a mainstream company? But they again win, and they certainly are a model to follow for customer satisfaction.
If you, for whatever reason, don't want to buy an Apple device, but you still want to be able to use the OS, we have a guide for building a Hackintosh. And they keep this guide up to date. It basically goes through and lists all of the hardware that would be supported in a custom machine that you build. I also know a few people who are able to do this on their netbooks. So if you're interested in this, you can look at the hardware that you currently have and look at this hardware guide, see if the two match, and you might just have yourself a Hackintosh.
The Mac App Store has been updated to warn people that they already own software before they repurchase it. Of course, this has already been available on iTunes, saying you already own that app, but this includes apps that have not been purchased through the App Store. However, for it to work, the app must be installed before it can actually be detected. So it's not just the fact that you purchased it somewhere else, but if it's installed on your computer, it says, hey, you've already purchased this. So that's a cool feature. Keep folks happy from purchasing something twice.
Yeah, there's still unfortunately not a way to transfer something that you have purchased previously and then be able to get that from the App Store without having to buy it again. But at least you're warned before you do so. Speaking of Macs, Lifehacker has an article talking about how to protect yourself from the recently discovered Lion password exploit. And the article describes what the exploit is. It was initially theorized that only somebody who had physical access to your machine would be able to do this, but they describe in the article how it might be possible for someone to do this remotely as well. And the article talks about some things that you can do, including looking at parental controls to basically block out access to things like Terminal and X11 to protect yourself from this hack. And in the end, they sort of had the feeling that this wasn't as big a deal as people thought it might be. But it's always a good idea to know how to protect yourself. I disagree, too. I mean, you never know.
I disagree because what this means, Lion allows people to change passwords without first entering the original password. That's a major,
flaw. Of course, they've got to have your username before they're able to do that. But it is a major thing. I think that Lifehacker thought it wasn't a big deal because, you know, how many people are you going to allow physical access to your machine? Well, there may be an instance where you don't have control over that. What happens if that machine gets stolen?
Or U3 drive or SD card with something on it. I mean, there are ways of socially engineering a way to get physical access to the machine. Most of these Mac hacks have been physical access predominantly, but, you know, it's just a matter of time. As this platform continues to grow in popularity, you know, you will see the same kinds of things that have happened for Windows for years. And as with Windows, it took many, many, many years of people hacking at it before it got a little bit better or even putting in its own malware detection. And so the same thing will happen here. It's just a natural order of things.
It's kind of interesting how people tend to want to downplay these security vulnerabilities, like Skype, for instance, has now admitted to a security problem in its iOS app. And they do say that they are working diligently to fix this. Basically, the exploit might allow someone to get access to your address book. But the interesting thing is they knew about it way back at the beginning of September, and they didn't really start jumping on this until it kind of made it into the news. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're really going to work on it and get something out soon. But they knew about it in quite enough time to do something about it and still haven't.
Well, if you use LinkedIn, we've heard that the iPhone app for LinkedIn has been made more accessible. Some upcoming webinars that may be of interest for you. First, on September 28th, covers getting a job while protecting your SSI and SSDI benefits. And another on October 12th covers disability and employment. And you can get those links over at cerotalk.com.
The Housing Urban Development, or HUD, has awarded almost $100 million to promote jobs, self-sufficiency, and independent living. What this money is going to go towards is maintaining existing jobs and hiring additional people whose jobs are to get those who are on HUD in touch with resources that are going to help them maintain jobs, possibly education, independent living skills, that kind of thing, with the ultimate goal of getting them out of Housing Urban Development, off welfare, and economically independent.
Well, folks like to hear success stories, especially about transitioning from having eyesight to going to blindness. But Ben Carpillo is a blind attorney that practices disability law in the state of California. He's also a musician, runner, and father. And you can read a very interesting article talking about how he adapted to vision loss after having brain surgery to remove a tumor, and just his whole adjustment process to being blind.
If you want to cyber stalk someone, and who doesn't? Maybe you're looking for somebody you knew in high school or elementary school or whatever, or maybe you just want to stalk your ex and say bad things to them over the phone or via email. There's a tool out there for you, and it's called PIPL. It's a method to search for that person you are looking for if you're not able to find them through a Google search or on Facebook or something like that. And they've recently added to PIPL with a sort of identity management service that will allow you to search for people that maybe have a very common name and then figure out what information you found belongs to which identity of this person with that name.
Now, see, you look at this all negatively. I was looking at this more positively. I mean, help find a lost love, family members, some old friends and classmates you lost touch with, or maybe checking out a potential employee if you're in a hiring position, or a potential employer if you want to work for someone else.
Well, it's like any technology. It can be used for positive or negative things, and perhaps I've just become pessimistic about the use of technology as it relates to searching for people. But you're absolutely right. There are legitimate reasons for doing this beyond just going to stalk somebody.
And tying this back to Facebook, you know, there's a new part of Facebook that's called timelines, where you can kind of sort of put your major events in photos and pictures and things like that, and it'll actually be a chronicle of your life. So when you go to look up people now, you can learn so much more about them. This online identity concept that Google Plus and Facebook is starting to promote is also very interesting, because it'll all be laid out there for you. So and how to guide for stalking, like Ricky was talking
about.
That's
right. And I guess it saves time when you ultimately do see that person again. What have you been up to lately? Here, go look at my timeline.
Well, speaking of technology being used for good and bad, an interesting article talks about, if technology now allows us to see with our tongues, could this same technology be used to both monitor and record our dreams? This really got me thinking. I'm like, wow, I'm not alone in thinking about this, but think of the problems we could solve if we could capture all the great ideas that are lost in our sleep. I don't know about you. I wake up and have song ideas and all kinds of cool ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Or think about why, when we wake up, maybe we're upset, you know, begin our day in a bad mood, as they say, getting up on the wrong side of the bed. A lot of times that's induced by the dreams that we had overnight.
Exactly. Actually, just about 20 minutes before we began recording this, there was an article released talking about how a group at Berkeley is doing this very thing. There was a group in Japan doing this back in 2008, and now Berkeley has released some research on it. They had three research subjects, and basically they'd put them in an MRI, and they showed them several hours of YouTube videos. And what they were doing is they were watching to see how the brain would react when it saw certain images. How does the brain process this? There are certain waves generated when certain images are seen. Once they had done that, the scientists were then able to show them sets of related images. So they weren't the exact YouTube movies that they'd seen before, but they showed them these sort of related images, and they watched how the brain processed them and produced these very fuzzy images that were clearly what the person was watching. So this is the first step into something really very interesting. This reminds me of a movie that was released in the very early 90s called Until the End of the World. And this had no commercial success whatsoever. Of course, the movie is about literally almost 5 hours long. And it talks about this guy is on the run from a government agency because he stole a prototype of a device that would allow him to take pictures that could later be taken back to his blind mother. And essentially, she could be hooked up to this device and have those pictures played back to her, and she'd be able to perceive them. But they discovered that this device could also record your dreams, and a portion of the movie is dedicated to many of the characters becoming addicted to watching the playback of their dreams. So if you haven't seen this movie, check it out. Great, very interesting movie, really fantastic soundtrack.
Well, everyone has their own preferred way to communicate. This is something I really caught on to when working at the Better Business Bureau, where I had to reach business owners and individuals. And, you know, if you say, well, I called him 5 times and I never heard from him, the thing that I've learned is that some people are email, some folks are phone, some are now Twitter or Facebook. And this new study says that 1 in 3 adults, are just under, I guess, 31%, prefer text messaging as their way to communicate. And even my son said himself that I like it because it saves time. I don't have to engage in a long phone conversation with someone.
Yeah, I'm in this camp too. I much prefer either getting an instant message as opposed to a phone call or a text message. because if somebody needs something and I can answer a question quickly, then I'll be able to just type a response and go on with what I'm doing. Whereas if somebody calls you, and I'm not saying this because I'm a misanthrope and I hate people or whatever, but you know, if somebody calls you, you've got to stop, you've got to engage in small talk. Hi, how you doing? Where are you going for lunch? Blah, blah, blah. And oh, by the way, yes, I called for a reason. And 15 minutes later, you might get off the phone. And beyond that, you don't know what somebody else is doing. They may be eating dinner, spending time with the family, engaged in something that requires a high degree of concentration. And a phone ring can just really jar somebody's concentration, whereas a quick text message is almost something you can just deal with and then move on.
Agreed. That's what we have for content today and upcoming is part two of four when Mike Cabo tells us about some cool cases for your MacBook Air.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again with the news next week.
This is Michael Loff, and today it's part two of four as we learn more about the MacBook Air. In our first segment, which you can check out at serialtalk.com, Mike Cabo went into great detail about the MacBook Air and different customizations you can make to decide which one is best for you. He, of course, has the 11.6-inch unit. And today, in part two, we're going to talk about cases. And he's come up with three different cases to help us make an informed decision. But before we get into specifics, let's talk about why. Why do you want to protect this device?
Well, you know, Michael, first of all, the reason for my audio sounding like this is many of you have written me and asked, what does the microphone on the MacBook Air sound like? So I have put away my, quote, broadcast quality stuff, and I'm still at Guide Dog School. And I'm recording today with Michael, with the MacBook Air 11.6-inch. So this is what the microphone sounds like, and this is what I'll be conducting our review with today.
Actually, sounds pretty good.
Well, good. I'm glad you like it. I can't hear it. I haven't heard it yet, so I'll be interested to hear what it sounds like once we're done. You know, Michael, as we all travel, you travel with us to the different shows, and I travel quite a bit for my job. And blind folks as a whole, we tend to carry our technology with us. I would say even more so than the mainstream in some respects. Very important thing, though, for many of us, because we do use a cane or a guide dog or various travel devices and travel accessories, if you will. You know, we like to have our hands free. And so we need bags that are, functional, that are tough, that can take the wear and tear of being used every day, just isn't going to fall off our shoulder or off our back, or isn't worse than that going to hurt the technology that costs us so much money for these things. So to that end, as I said last week, you know, one of the things I found with the MacBook Air, especially the 11.6-inch, was the first one that came out. This is the first time that I've seen the 13-inch. But especially for the 11.6, it's always been kind of a blingy device for corporate folks that, like I said, don't really use computers much. I think until this particular release, this generation of them is really when the machine got powerful. And of course, as you broaden your market, you broaden the need for accessories. And one of the problems I've had finding cases is, well, what cases work, what cases don't? How much is too much to pay for a case? How much is too little to pay for a case? I mean, if you're going to run out and spend $1,400 or $1,300 or $1,700 for the bigger 13-inch MacBook Air, you're not going to want to put a $20 case on this thing. I'm sorry, but it just doesn't make any sense. It's like buying a Lexus and then going out and buying recap tires to put on it, you know? So as I started looking around, what I found was that a lot of cases were fashion over function. And that concerned me because, you know, as blind folks, we can't see the pictures out there. So what I did is I got some of these, and I've got some with me today. And the first one we're going to talk about is our fashion over function case, Michael. And that one promptly went back to Amazon.com. But for the sake of, and I'll talk about it now, but for the sake of people who want to support the podcast, and if you're interested in this kind of a case, because everybody is different, by all means, go ahead and click on it in the show notes and support the Serial Talk podcast through our Amazon affiliation.
Yeah, it would be a turnoff to me. Fashion over function. You're already saying its functionality is impaired, but it looks good. I don't know. It's a strange moniker to put on it, but it is there. Well, let's talk about the fashion over function case. I mean, what does it consist of?
Well, the first case that we have, Michael, is the book. And this is a very unique case, I've got to say. I bought it on Amazon. It's $79. And Michael, first of all, I've got to say, the book is a gorgeous case. What it is it's a book. It looks like a leather-bound book, like a Bible or a very fancy family album, you know. And the cool thing about this thing is that you could sit it on top of a table with your MacBook Air inside all zipped up, and no one will ever know that there's a MacBook Air in there unless they know that kind of case. The leather is beautiful. It's distressed leather, so you're not going to have, you know, this leather that if you dent it, it's going to look bad. Distressed leather kind of already looks, you know, like it's been worn in already. And it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous bag. What you do is you put your MacBook in there. And then as you flip the book cover back, the cover of the Mac goes back with it. And you just keep it in there. It has no handle. It has no kind of strap or anything. So you unzip it around, and then you use it, and then you zip it back up and put it back in your briefcase or on your bookshelf where all your other books are or what have you. And to me, it's just, my wife looked at it and said, man, that's beautiful, this and that. And it was. But just function? Why? I mean, everybody could say, oh, what a nice case. Yeah, well, watch it. You know, I might drop it. It just didn't protect. It didn't provide the protection I wanted for the MacBook Air. It wasn't functional for me at all. And that's my opinion, of course. You, if you take advantage of Amazon and their return policies, as I do, you're welcome to order it. Give it a shot. Please do make sure you use that link on our notes page. And if you like it, hey, God bless you, man. That's why we're reviewing these things, because we want to make sure that we have a little something for everybody, right? And it's $79. And if you have Amazon Prime, you get it shipped for nothing.
Let's talk about the Tumi.
Okay, well, Tumi is a great company, Michael. Anybody who buys bags knows that Tumi is just the creme de la creme of bags. And the bag that I'm about to talk about is no different. It is a creme de la creme Tumi bag. It is a great, it's called the Tumi McNair Slim Brief. And again, there's a link to all of these bags in the notes. But this bag, and I've got it right here, the bags I'm going to talk about are not made of leather. My favorite bag in the whole wide world is a bag I bought for my netbook a couple years back, and it's a Tumi bag. And I use that with the MacBook Air. It'll fit in there, and of course, because the MacBook Air is not much bigger than a netbook. But the problem with it is it's bulky. This bag, on the other hand, this Tumi bag that I have here, the McNair, it is not good for a MacBook Air necessarily. Now let me qualify that, because I wouldn't want anybody to think that I don't like this bag. I think this bag is fantastic. But for an 11-inch MacBook Air, it floats around in here. It's a big bag. It's great, Michael, for when you go do your conference interviews and things like that, where you can put your MacBook Pro in here. I mean, it'll handle up to a 15 or a 17-inch laptop in here. It's got one zipper on top, very good zipper. All the Tumi zippers are fantastic. On the front of the bag, it's got three pockets, and they're really nice size, so you could put your microphones and your power supplies on and stuff. In the middle, there's one zipper, and then you open it up, and you can slip your laptop in there, of course, and just leave it in the middle. Or you can fit it into a little compartment that they have in here that your laptop will fit right into. It doesn't really look like it makes much of a difference. And then on the top of the bag, inside, there's like a magnetic closure that closes pretty tight. And you can just, you know, put papers in there and that kind of thing. Now, that is the bag inside, and it's nice and cushiony. It is black. So, Michael, this case is made of ballistic nylon, and while I particularly like leather, this nylon is really awesome because it's very durable. It's not going to just get scratched up or hurt. It seems to be pretty water resistant. And again, it's really nice. The quality in this bag, the zippers are awesome. Another thing I really like about this bag is the back. It's got this feature that my other Tumi has as well, the leather Tumi I have has as well. And that is, you know, when you travel with a suitcase that's got a handle on it, you always have to kind of rig your bag onto the top of it if you want to keep your other hand free so you can walk with a dog and you can drag your bag, or if you're walking with a cane or whatever. This bag allows you, it has a zipper on the bottom and a zipper on the top. So if you could picture, it slides up through the back of the bag, the handle of your suitcase, of your roll around suitcase, comes up through the bag, and you can just set it on top. So as you're rolling your case, you know, your suitcase, this bag is sitting on top and it's very secure. So it's not moving in there anywhere. It's an excellent, excellent feature. The other feature I love about this bag is the carry strap. The carry strap for this bag is very, very comfortable to wear. It's a non-slip strap. You put it on and it will stick to your shoulder. It does not slide around and all that. The strap is actually made of a material that feels very similar to what the seat belts in your car are made of. So this isn't going to, you know, fray and break. And I mean, this looks like something that you'd use to protect yourself in a car accident. I mean, it's a very, very well-made strap. But the thing I like the most about this strap is the way that you attach it to the bag. Sometimes I used to have a Sony Vaio, Michael, and the worst thing that ever happened to me was I had it in this case that had a strap that kind of clipped onto the bag. And one day, the little thing that attached the strap to the bag just kind of came undone, and my Sony Vaio fell about 8 inches and shattered.
Oh, my. Okay.
Oh, yeah, dude.
So that's very important to think about, not just the straps, but the way that they're connected.
So what this does is it's got this very clever function where when you turn the strap a certain way, it slides the locking mechanism for the strap to the O-rings on the bag. And they're not even O-rings. It's a weird looking connector on the bag itself. That's very sturdy, by the way. It's all double or triple stitched onto the bag. So that's not going to just rip off of there. But the very cool thing about it is you have to turn the strap a certain way so that the connector will slip open to connect to the O-ring. So you're not going to just undo it by mistake. You know, so I can't rant enough about the quality of this bag. And by the way,
but you are going to pay for that.
Yeah, you are going to pay for it.
I believe it comes in around $250. Is that right?
$255, my friend. But there is no such thing as a cheap Tumi bag. And of course, you can buy this bag at the Tumi website, or you can go straight to our website at serotalk.com and click on the show notes, and you will find a direct link to it. I am hoping to find a better fit for the MacBook Air from Tumi, hopefully in leather, because I love my leather bags, but I haven't found one yet. They did not have a MacBook size to share with me when they sent me this bag for evaluation. So sorry about that, folks. But this bag, for somebody who's looking for a very nice business brief, for something for a bigger laptop than the 11-inch, this is your bag. This is a very, very nice bag.
It sounds better fitted for the MacBook as opposed to the Air. Maybe too much room for it to slide around. But that leads us to our final one here, product number three, which is called the Wallet.
Yes, this is from a San Francisco company called Waterfield Designs, and it's called the MacBook Air Wallet. Now, this bag ain't much to look at, as they say, and at least the reviews say it isn't. I actually like it. It's the same. It's kind of a ballistic nylon. I have it right here. And it is also got nice zippers. So let me describe this bag to you. Like I said, it's not much to look at. It's a rectangular bag. It's much, much thinner than the Tumi bag. But the cool thing about this bag, Michael, is it fits everything so snug. And really, when you travel with your MacBook Air, I mean, you're not going to carry a bunch of stuff. I carry the MacBook Air. I carry a couple of accessories that we're going to talk about next week. And I carry the power supply in here. and I can carry my iPhone in here or my Android phone, whatever I want. When I open the bag, first of all, the zipper on the bag goes kind of halfway around it. It starts at the top, and then it slides down the side of the bag. So your bag is kind of, if you can picture this, Michael, it's got kind of a flap. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't open up all the way.
Right, a round flap on top.
It's a rectangle, and then what it does is it covers the zipper covers the top of the laptop bag, you know, or the wallet, and then you slide it down along the long side of the rectangle to about most of the way down, and then so you've got the top open and the depending on how you're looking at it, the one side is kind of open. And that, what it does is it gives you access to the inside of the bag. In the top of the bag, you've got three different compartments. One is a small itty-bitty one for your cell phone. The other one is a medium size, and you can use that for your, for your power supply or whatever. The other one under that one that you can use for your super drive if you want to carry a super drive or a DVD drive. And then we get to the middle of the bag. The middle of the bag is very, very luxurious. This whole bag inside is very padded, very nice. The middle of the bag has a sleeve that you can drop your MacBook Air into, or that you can place it into. Your MacBook Air is not going to move in this bag. It is going to stay very firm. It's going to stay very steady. And it's not going to be real bulky. It doesn't change the outside dimensions of the bag. I can have a bunch of stuff in this bag, and it doesn't really bulk up and get fat, you know, and get all lumpy and nasty. Right behind the MacBook Air, it's sitting on two pieces of plastic that are surrounded, of course, with this very fluffy material. And the MacBook Air, between the front of it, the top of it, and underneath it, are very well padded, very well taken care of. So you're not going to have to worry about if you inadvertently drop this. I would suggest you didn't. But the chances are very good that if you drop this bag, nothing's going to happen to your precious MacBook Air. Now, behind the MacBook Air, or actually in the area that you open on the side, when you unzip it, it's got like a little compartment, or actually a pretty big compartment. And in there, I have the Kindle in there. And of course, it doesn't bulk up. And I have some USB cables and a couple other goodies. Very, very nice bag. And then last but certainly not least is the outside of the bag. The outside of the bag is you can get it in a number of different green and a couple other colors. I got this one in black because I like black. Very matches with everything. But they've got some pretty funky colors up there too and everything. It's a San Francisco bag, so it's got that West Coast vibe thing going on, you know, where people want the, you know, the interesting looking bags, but I like a low profile. But it does have a leather, like a distressed leather around the edges. So if you set this down somewhere, like the book, it's not, you know, if you put it down on a rough surface or whatever, it's not going to mess up the leather. It's not like this beautiful, you know, smooth leather. It's distressed. It looks like it's going to be able to handle kind of a beating and keep on going. The last thing on this thing, of course, is the strap. The strap is an option. You can get, when you order it from their webpage, which you can get to right from our show notes, you can either put O-rings on this bag and add your own, and put your own strap on it. No O-rings at all, and just use it as a wallet where you can slip this into another case. And it will slip into another case. I would say it's not as thin as a sleeve, but it will comfortably fit into another briefcase. I don't see why somebody would do that, but I guess if you want to, you can do that. And also, it has this wonderful strap. Again, like the Tumi, the strap will not slip off your shoulder. I like wearing the strap across my body, so I will put the strap over my head with the MacBook Air resting on my right hip, with the shoulder strap over my left shoulder. So it's kind of across my body, if you can picture that. And it is a very nice strap. It doesn't bother me. I've worn it around here on a number of trips. I expect that this is the main bag I'll be carrying for the MacBook Air. One last feature of the bag that's very nice on the outside. On the back, it's got kind of an elasticy pocket that you can just put stuff in. So you can, you know, you can put your wallet in there or whatever. You can put papers if you've got an airline ticket or whatever, you can put it back there. Nothing that you, of course, you don't want somebody reaching in there and grabbing. But of course, since on the side of the bag that's closest to your body, keeping your wallet in there isn't a problem, or keeping your airline ticket in there isn't a problem. Now, the best part about this bag, Michael,
is the price.
That's right. It's $89 for the 11.6 inch MacBook Air and $99 for the 13 inch MacBook Air. And then you would pay an extra $22 if you want the strap. There's two straps that they offer you, a basic, what they call a basic strap for $12. And then there's the better strap for $22. I don't know what the difference is, but for the difference of $10, hey, give me the better one, right? So that is my bag pick. I love this bag. It's amazing for the MacBook Air. The Tumi is a great bag in its own right. Don't think I'm saying that it's a bad bag. It is not. I am a very, very heavy-duty Tumi advocate. I love Tumi. But this is economical. It's not bad-looking, and it fits the bill for the MacBook Air. So that is our bag review. Please do feel free to send us your comments, questions, your iReports, however it is you want to reach out and get in touch. If you've got questions or comments, please do so. I will answer them here on the podcast. Please feel free to share the printed versions of these reviews with your friends on Twitter or Facebook. So basically, if you want to reach out to us, that's the way you do it. Next week, we are going to cover different portable solutions, not only power solutions, because this has a 4.5 hour battery on Windows 7 and about a 5 hour battery on Lion. But there's some solutions for powering this baby on the go. And then just some other things. The 128 gig hard drive could be a challenge for some people who like to carry a lot of files with them. And I've got a hard drive that I want to talk to you about that I carry with me that actually got me out of a pickle last night, because I had I was trying to install a Bluetooth headset with the computer, and I blew away the drivers, and I had to go look on the drive here and find them. And I found them, so I was able to reinstall my Bluetooth drivers on the go. But the Bluetooth drivers are something I don't use that frequently, so I wouldn't want to keep them, you know, lying on the SSD. But anyway, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about just various portable solutions for the MacBook Air, whether they be power, whether they be storage, whatever they are. We'll be talking about them next week, so stay tuned.
All right, and you can get show notes and links to all the products that we talk about at serotalk.com. Mikey, we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.